Welcome back, warriors and supporters. For episode 6 of CWF Presents, CRPS/RSD is real. This week we have guest Dr. O on with us, and she's going to talk about the extra precautions that dentists take when they have a CRPS patient, and how important it is to find a provider that's willing to listen to you and take your conditions into consideration. We know how important it is for warriors to be heard and for CRPS to be known prior to any type of surgery or treatment. We also know that it is common for brittle teeth and deterioration of teeth in warriors and how important routine care is. Dr. O is also a sponsor for one of our warriors in the Route 66 Conqueror Challenge. So we're going to touch base with her on that and her desire behind wanting to sponsor and help a warrior to be able to experience this. Without any further ado, I hand the mic over to Kimberly.
Hello and welcome. My name is Kimberly Sigelka. I'm a CRPS warrior and volunteer with the CRPS Warriors Foundation. Today we are talking to Dr. Obude, also known as Dr. O, and she is a general dentist and familiar with CRPS, and we're going to talk a bit about dental health and CRPS and how important it is and what steps we can take as CRPS patients to make sure that we're properly cared for and that our doctors know about our condition. So without further ado, if Dr. you could please introduce yourself.
My name is Dr. Obude. I am a general dentist here in California, in Temecula, California. And I was introduced to CRPS and the foundation by the CEO, Deb Jankowski. We joined a business networking referral group together. So that's where she kind of let me in and told me more about the organization, how, you know, the disease is very, you know, debilitating and can be really just hard, and just how a lot of people are just looking for resources and support. Always like to see how I can help out. So I decided would love to be an option for her and for the warriors, and as someone, you know, willing to help, try to help take care of or facilitate dental care as needed.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Because it is hard to go to a new doctor and they've never heard of CRPS before. So it's hard to explain it to them in your doctor's appointment. It could take up the whole time of your doctor's appointment if they've never heard about it before. And they may not have what they need to support you as a CRPS patient. One thing I wanted to ask was, what are some recommendations you have as a dentist who is aware of CRPS that patients could make sure that their dentist knows about, things that could help them when they go to the dentist?
I think just being upfront about the condition. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not an expert on the condition, and I'm fairly like new and still learning a lot about it, how it manifests and how it affects everything. But we just also want to like make sure we're also focusing on it as well, and not discrediting like our oral health, making sure we are keeping up with that. You know, there's a lot of things like that. So talking with Deb, a lot of the things we're talking about was having to find some way of getting sedation or general anesthesia for dental care, just because of the flare-ups and how just light tactile stimulation can really set off a flare. And so I think just being upfront and being honest with your providers, finding a provider who's willing to listen and really, you know, willing to kind of understand dynamics of it, I think that sometimes can be really tough, and that's probably a good thing to look for.
Yeah. I mean, there's that whole idea of people being afraid to go to the dentist, right? When you have chronic pain and anxiety and you don't want it to be flared, who have CRPS might choose to avoid going to dentists, which is not a good idea.
Yeah.
So is there something that you could kind of share with us that would inspire them to know that they really do need to keep going to the dentist?
I mean, it's really, you know, the oral health is still, you know, the mouth, it's like the gateway to the body. And so kind of letting a lot of these things go untreated, you know, it's all just progressive. And so that can set off a whole, you know, new sequela of more pain, more treatment, emergency treatment, which obviously at that point it becomes more expensive, something else that you need to focus on. So just trying to stay up on top of it to make sure that that doesn't become a problem later on or a more significant problem later on. So at least going and getting your checkups and seeing if there's things that need to be done and then finding the best avenue to get them done.
Okay. So I know you had mentioned different types of anesthesia or general anesthesia for treatments. What are the different types of anesthesia that maybe you would recommend for CRPS patients?
Yeah, so we can start with just there's different levels of, it's kind of like a continuum of sedation. So, you know, it's not necessarily you all just asleep. Some is conscious sedation, mild sedation, you know, trying to just get rid of the anxiety aspect of it. And depending on the person, requires different needs. A lot of, you know, in office, I do sedations, but it's more conscious sedation. So you're still awake. There's limits to how much I can do. We have to factor in a lot of things with CRPS, is a lot of times patients are on or have been taking a lot of pain medications, which means that some of the sedation medications may not work as well because you've built up a tolerance. So when we look at that, we might find that in the dental office setting, just doing a conscious sedation may not be enough. So at that point, we look at doing an anesthesiologist who would actually administer more of a general anesthesia where you are more out of it. You are, you know, more asleep, you know, they may intubate you. That level of kind of sedation, general anesthesia may be a better fit for a lot of patients to make sure that the appointment can go as harmonious as possible.
Some kind of things that I had read about as recommendations, being in a chair for that amount of time period might be very uncomfortable depending on where somebody's CRPS is. So whether it's something that they need to talk to you ahead of time so that you, the doctor's office, has the right things to support your legs, like if your leg needs to be elevated, if you need pillows, if you need certain things to be comfortable. And so those would be things that they'd want to talk to you before they went through with their procedure, right?
Exactly. And so all of that would be discussed kind of in, you know, your initial consults, your initial kind of like treatment planning is getting a whole history of knowing where is the CRPS located, what kind of things set it off, how best can we make it a comfortable appointment, what is the timing of things, how long are things going to take? So that also kind of lives, okay, do we need to split up? We have a lot of work to do. Do we need to split this up into multiple appointments to make sure that we're not having you under too long or in a position that's too uncomfortable for a long time? So a lot of those things, it would be part of that information gathering process.
Are there different types of tools that you would use for somebody who was more sensitive to pain or that could be triggered by vibration? Is that something like if you have certain tools, there'd be certain ones that you would use that would maybe be for more sensitive people? Or is it something that's where the sedation would come into play?
It's probably more where the sedation comes in. There's not a whole lot of variation in the types of tools that we can use and kind of offer and utilize. You know, if we have to drill, we have to drill. You know, the drill, instruments are instruments. You know, just kind of being mindful of the pressure that we're using and then trying, you know, to do what we need to do in that instance and just kind of, you know, being aware that, you know, light tactile sensation can set off a flare. So just, you know, trying to do more visuals to start with and just letting you know, hey, I do have to look into the mouth. I have to do these things. If it's something where it's really easily set off, you can always, you know, the first one might be the consult where we're not really even looking at anything. We're just really getting a history and seeing out what is the best course of action to get treatment. And then the next visit would be an actual, you know, anesthesia appointment where they would put you under. And at that point, now that we know you're under, from a lot of this, the pain reflexes are diminished. We know you have you know, fairly comfortable. Then we can go ahead and do our exam, do our x-rays, and then, you know, do the treatment as needed, you know, without thinking or being concerned that we're going to make you like a really uncomfortable in that position or setting off a really big flare off of that.
Okay. So a good recommendation might be that when people are looking to have dental care, they book a consultation visit to start off with so that they can kind of just go in detail about their history. Mm-hmm. A lot of people with CRPS also have secondary conditions, which might also affect some of the care with. So based on what those secondary conditions could be, I know I have a lot of allergies. So I've always been concerned about the ingredients that are in like fillings and stuff. So that's just a lot of information to do at any singular appointment. So having a consultation would be really important to give you that information, right? So you could prepare.
Exactly. I get all, you know, all of that ties into just having like an individualized treatment plan. So really getting as much information as possible, you know, before you start things. So we know kind of what we're looking at, you know, we have the best plan of attack for you and to get you healthy. So getting all the information, knowing the allergies, knowing, you know, what are the trigger points, things like that, knowing past experiences with anesthesia. What has that been like for you? You know, has it been easy for someone to, you know, anesthetize you, get anesthesia? Has it been easy or difficult for someone to be able to place an IV? Are you even able to get an IV in prior to being, you know, sedated? Because then that changes the treatment plan as well. If we can't get an IV while you're conscious because it sets off a flare, then we might look at having to have the anesthesiologist come in, you know, and kind of induce a general anesthesia state before doing the IV. So all of those things kind of play into part with making sure that we have all the information to get you the best treatment and the best treatment plan to get everything taken care of.
What are some general day-to-day oral health recommendations you have for people?
Yeah, so it always goes down to try and brush toothpaste floss. You know, got to do it. So, you know, making sure you're brushing twice a day, flossing, using fluoride products. A lot of people sometimes have, you know, you've seen a reluctance to using fluoride. And so that's, you know, personal preference, but there are other alternatives that are really good. Some products that use what's called nanohydroxyapatite. Basically all that is this really small particles of what your teeth are already made up of. And that is beneficial because you can use it. It's more of a, you know, natural alternative to fluoride. That some people may view that kind of has a lot of the similar effects. So especially if you're someone that you're not getting into the dentist a lot, you're not able to get into the dentist a lot, adding that will be helpful in just trying to make sure you're maintaining, you know, a cavity-free environment as much as possible, or decreasing your risk of getting cavities. Because that's what essentially what the fluoride does and what the nanohydroxyapatite does is they just help to incorporate into the teeth so that they're less susceptible to acid breakdown from the foods we eat, from the sodas, you know, all of that stuff. So, and then being mindful of our diet, making sure we're not doing a lot of carbonated beverages, things that are low acidity, because that's where you start to get the teeth breakdown. So, you know, getting a lot of water, milk, nuts products are always good as well. Cheeses are good, but the main tried and true is really, you know, brushing twice a day, flossing, using a mouthwash if needed, and then using either fluoride or nanohydroxyapatite products to help get that preventative side in there.
Okay. How often do you recommend that people see a dentist?
Every 6 months. And then it also depends too. You know, some people may, some people are a bit more cavity prone than others. So for those, we may recommend, hey, we might want to see you every 3 or 4 months, just so we can keep an eye on things. If we start seeing things breaking down, we can treat it sooner rather than later before it gets big. If we have gum disease and we, you know, collect a lot of plaque and calculus, we might say, okay, we'll come in a little bit more frequently for your cleanings. Just so, again, we can kind of keep an eye on things, monitor things, treat things as they're small as opposed to when they're big.
Is there anything that you specifically focus on in your practice or specialize in or are passionate about that you want to share?
I mean, I think the main thing is just try to be, you know, respectful of the patients as much as possible and try to have that kind of human touch with it. Just really be understanding and trying to make sure our patients are comfortable, to understand that, you know, it's not always that fun to have, you know, have the procedures done, and dentistry is an interesting field and where a lot of procedures are done while you're still awake and it's in your airway, which a lot of medicine is not like that. So, you know, I like to just try to keep that in mind as we're treating patients or general practice. So general practice means you do a little bit of everything, kind of like you're, you know, a jack of all trades. So just kind of trying to provide the best optimal care for patients, just making sure patients are comfortable. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, I have gone with extra training in doing sedations and just to be able to offer that to patients, offer patients who are nervous, who have put off treatment for a while because they are very nervous or scared or may have had a bad experience. I like to be able to provide that so that they're able, okay, we can get you healthy. You know, that's kind of the main goal. Let's get you healthy. Let's figure out a way that we can get you healthy. And we have ways to do it.
It's great that you've taken the time to learn the extra ways of sedation to make people comfortable. And that is a key part with CRPS patients, is their comfort level. And like you said, it might require sedation. So that's wonderful that you took that extra training. And I hope there's a lot of other doctors out there that do that as well. Would you be willing to share with us why you decided to become a dentist?
Yeah. So it's a little funny story. I was always kind of interested in healthcare and medicine. I also felt like I was not always, you know, the most artistic. My sister got more of the artist genes of the family than I did. So in high school, we always had to do like a senior project. My mom had mentioned, oh, you should be a dentist. And I was like, oh, no, I want to be in people's mouths all day. That's so disgusting. But I took the time of the senior project to go in like career shadow. And I shadowed someone and they had me jump in and assist right away. And I just found it extremely fascinating, just, you know, getting that health side of it, being able to look at oral health, getting people healthy that way. But also there is an artistic side of it where you're, you know, rebuilding teeth, creating teeth that have been broken down and being able to put that back. So, you know, that's always been nice. You know, that really sparked my interest in the field, that experience. And then just investigating it more throughout undergrad and college and volunteering and just feeling like, you know, that was a place for me where I could definitely, you know, be in healthcare, be able to help people as well. And, you know, have a variety of procedures to kind of, you know, keep interested and be interested in them. So hopefully that answers that question.
Is there anything else you'd like to include that you'd want people to know about general dentistry or taking care of your teeth?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like basic hygiene, always soft bristle toothbrushes, be gentle to the teeth. You know, plaque is soft. We just want to remove the plaque. We don't want to like get too aggressive in there because that could cause other issues as well. I think a lot of times too, like toothpaste, I feel like it's personal preference, right? Like I just say, as long as you get like the fluoride in there. And then I am understanding and like sensitive to people who for whatever reason would rather not use fluoride products. And so there are now other alternatives that are really good, like I said, which is looking for the nano hydroxyapatite products. So with the mouthwashes, it kind of just depends on what you need. Because, you know, now there's so many and they have some that, you know, again, have fluoride, some that don't, some that are targeting more gum disease. So it kind of just depends on what you need. There's some that are, you know, for dry mouth. And that's another thing too, is like, if you're on a lot of medications, you may experience dry mouth. And so trying to find a good product for that, because how that kind of affects it is that when you have, you know, if you don't have the saliva kind of buffer, it makes you more prone to getting cavities as well, getting more breakdown of the teeth. So finding a product, you know, that can kind of help with that, if not even asking your medical provider if the dry mouth is really bad, if there's medication that they can prescribe for you to kind of help with that and increase the salivary flow. I think that's kind of a big one when we start seeing people on a lot of medications and how that kind of affects the teeth and the oral health as well, which then makes it, you know, more important to come in more frequently, just because whenever we are more prone to cavities, we want to kind of see if we can catch them while they're small than when they grow.
So when you mentioned a healthy dental diet, and maybe like the idea of wanting to keep your teeth strong by like taking vitamins or supplements, what would be some, I know you said low acid. I know there's always that, like when you're talking about your dentist, they're going to tell you not to eat sweets, right? Just kind of like if you could elaborate on what you would consider to be a healthy dental diet.
Yeah, I mean, definitely decreasing sugar. I mean, the whole main thing is it's just the bacteria that's in our mouths, in everyone's mouth. They like to utilize the sugar that we eat. And that's what creates a lot of the acid, is when the bacteria is using the sugar, it creates a lot of acidic environment in our mouths. And that's what breaks the teeth down. So it kind of makes it an environment similar to if you're having a lot of soda, a lot of carbonation, it makes it so that the teeth are able to kind of break down a bit easier and form cavities. So that's where you definitely want to, you know, try to avoid sugar. And there's a lot of push recently too, that's been going to just avoiding sugar, decreasing the amount of sugar overall, because that's even affects your systemic health and promotes a lot of inflammation throughout the body. You know, that's kind of one that's that's very mean. There are foods that tend to be a little bit better for teeth. There's a lot of like nuts, but sometimes I get concerned with nuts because I see so many people with broken teeth after eating nuts. To a soft nut. You know, like pistachios. I'm like, I started avoiding them. I'm like, okay, too many people are coming in here with broken teeth. And like cheeses tend to be pretty good as well for the teeth. So it's just things like that. I think the main thing to really kind of think about is just avoiding sugar. Another thing people ought to do too is sometimes you think it's good, you know, after you've had coffee or you have soda to kind of go and brush your teeth right away, thinking, okay, I'm going to get rid of all of the acid. Actually, it's not a good thing because you kind of think about it. You've created an acid environment. Remember, the acid teeth start to break down and get soft in acid. That's what called basically the starting point of the cavities. So then the enamel and everything's starting to break down, and then you go brush your teeth right away. So it's a little bit softer. Now you're really aggressive in there. You could start to kind of wear away your enamel. So what's really key is if you do have, you know, coffee or soda, anything like that, drink water, you know, go ahead and have a cup of water with it, and then wait about 45 minutes to an hour before brushing your teeth. That way you can kind of buffer that acid environment, get it back to a more neutral environment, and then go ahead and brush and kind of get rid of all of any other little particles there.
That's a great tip, because I definitely have my cup of coffee and then brush my teeth. That is great. Now I know I will not do that, and I will do what you recommended. Yeah. So when you're talking about going back to the sedations, are these typically things that you would do more like topical anesthesia, like numbing gels to start with? I know people have talked about in the past using like the laughing gas in the dentist's office. Are these things that have changed over time that now you're using different types of anesthesia? What are the types of medications that you're using?
Yeah. So when it comes to anesthesia and just even just during treatment, you'll always have local anesthesia. You know, that's like what gets you numb. That's what everyone does through any procedure. So even if you are sedated, we would still get you numb. When you're sedated, it doesn't necessarily get rid of the pain pathway. So you would still feel like you'd be uncomfortable. And then that could also counteract the whole sedative properties. So that's kind of its own entity, is a local anesthetic that we use for procedures to make sure you're not feeling when we're drilling into the tooth and things like that. And then when we talk about actual like sedation, it's kind of like body sedation, if that kind of makes sense. So that would be like body general anesthesia.
Okay.
That's where like laughing gas comes into to kind of help just reduce anxiety. You know, then you can take those pills, you can take, again, reduce anxiety, get you calm, get you more comfortable. Fall asleep, you may not, you know, the whole point though is really just to get you more into a relaxed state. And then you kind of just increase on that gradient of that like body sedation. So you get something stronger where you might do it through an IV, you know, you're still breathing on your own, you're still conscious. You may not remember. The medications are pretty good at making it so that you don't remember. And so then that, again, just gets you to another level of comfortability. So, you know, that you're not so anxious, that you're more relaxed, you're calm. You know, just allow us to be able to get the treatment done, you know, faster and more efficiently. And then some people are just not a candidate. They're just really, really anxious, or they have conditions that make it so that, you know, the conscious options for, you know, body kind of sedation is a kind of may not work. And so those are the patients then that we would move to like a general anesthesia, which is more similar to what you think about in an OR. Where, you know, they kind of really put you out either with the gases or with IV, you know, to intubate you, making sure you're getting oxygen, all of that. So all along with any types of the body sedation, for the most part, we're going to be giving you supplemental oxygen anyway, and hooking up some monitors and making sure we're monitoring everything, you know, monitoring your heart, monitoring your breathing, you know, making sure are still being safe and stable. Those are really key important things. But hopefully that answers the question in terms of like the different types. There's, you know, the mouth, local anesthesia medications that we use to just numb everything up while we're working, always used no matter what, you know, what we're doing. If we're doing treatment, we generally are doing that, unless for some reason the patient requests not to, we don't think it's something that's going to be super invasive. And then you can kind of think of body sedation or body anesthesia. And those are things that we use to just make you more calm, make you more relaxed, make it, you know, easier for you to tolerate the procedure.
So CRPS patients have a tendency to have issues with their teeth and their gums. I know you said that you were new kind of to CRPS, but is this anything that you would have seen, or that you, if people have like issues with their gum health versus their teeth, are there things that you would recommend for them any differently than if you were just doing a regular hygiene appointment? Or is that something that has to be like really individualized care with your doctor?
Yeah, it can be a combination. You know, like I said, there's always some things you would recommend for some people that you may not recommend for others, because, you know, maybe they don't need it or they can tolerate it. But, you know, especially when you have, you know, starting getting gum issues, looking at adding adjuncts, like water picks are really great in there. Kind of think of it as like a pressure washer for your teeth. So those are like good things to add if we're, you know, seeing a lot of gum issues, a lot of gum health, and we'll have you come in for more frequent cleanings just so we can make sure it's stable. That's one thing about dental, like teeth, like bone loss. Once we get bone loss, we can't necessarily get it back. So our goal is to kind of maintain it. So we're looking to make sure we're getting rid of any inflammation in the gums, getting rid of any infections in the gums, and then maintaining our bone levels and then the teeth health.
Up to 75% of people with CRPS suffer from swollen gums and brittle teeth. So having good oral care is definitely an important factor. If somebody has brittle teeth, what is that something that they can do to help that condition?
With brittle teeth, I mean, I think it's just like your enamel is probably weak. That's kind of where the fluoride or the nanohydroxyapatite stuff kind of helps. Those are the kind of the products we can have to help kind of strengthen, it's kind of more like air quotes, strengthen the teeth back again. Basically, you're just looking to try to prevent cavity formation. And you kind of think of cavity formation as just a breakdown, the softening of the teeth. So what can we add in there to make the teeth hard again, as hard as possible? So that's kind of where that is. If their teeth are fragile and prone to kind of breaking, there might be other things going on there in terms of maybe you're grinding or clenching. And in those instances, you know, we would consider getting you a night guard or something in there just to help protect the teeth and help absorb those forces so we're not breaking your teeth down too much.
It's wonderful that you know about CRPS, but having an influx of patients yourself isn't necessarily expected. So
I think a main thing is really just trying to find a way to have an open, honest communication and finding someone who's willing to do that. And then kind of really talking about expectations, what concerns you have, and then just making it a team approach, you know, working with someone who wants to be a part of your team so that we can get you healthy, have that part, you know, something that you don't have to be afraid, you know, to do. And just so I think that's kind of a really big thing is just understanding the history, you know, your medical background and how all of that ties into your dental health and how that can change or affect the approach that's taken to your dental treatment plan.
So you sponsored a warrior in the Route 66 Challenge. So could you just elaborate on why you decided to do so?
Yeah, I think it, you know, it sounds like, again, from what I'm learning and everything, it, you know, it sounds like the diseases can be pretty debilitating and pretty isolating. And knowing, you know, from what I know of Deb and her condition and things that she talked about and conversations we've had, you know, I really wanted to help because it just kind of lets people know that, like, hey, there is someone out there who's thinking about you and supporting you. So that's why I thought it was really important to just, you know, let a warrior know that, you know, there's someone who does have you in mind and is rooting for you and you're not alone. That's what really motivated me to kind of sponsor someone.
Thank you so much for sharing that and for being a part of it. And being isolated and alone is a big feeling with this. And I think we tell each other all the time, you're not alone, but it's having people outside of our community that reach out and say that you're not alone, we see you, is really important. So thank you very much for doing that.
I'm happy to do it.
You wanting to get the word out and that people should be really upfront with our doctors. I think it's really important, that consultation piece that we talked about is so important. And thank you for being someone who's open and willing to work with patients with CRPS and being able to learn about them, because a lot of us with CRPS have been dismissed by doctors before. So having someone who's open to it and making sure that you find somebody who is willing to learn about CRPS if they don't know it already and wants, like you said, wants to be part of the team. That's really great. So thank you for being a resource for us and for sharing your information with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you, ladies, for an amazing episode with lots of information. If you would like to get in touch with Dr. O, her contact information and website link are in the description of this episode, as well as you can find her on our website, www.crpswarriorsfoundation.org, under the Resources and Doctors tab. If you would like to show your support for the podcast and for the foundation, you can do so by texting CWF Podcast to 53555. You can stop in on our social media every Friday for updates on where our warriors are at in the challenge and cheer them on. Each step forward that they take is replacing an I can't do that anymore with an I can do this. So help us cheer them on and get your updates every Friday. And when you stop in for your updates, don't forget to like and share and follow us. Something as simple as a share can move mountains when it comes to warriors. Every share reaches a warrior that maybe would not have heard the message or found the foundation or made a connection with somebody going through something similar to them if you didn't hit the share button. So I thank everybody for their continued support, and we will see you next time. Don't forget to tune back in on the 15th for our next episode.